Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today I'm joined by Emmett Peppers, and it's been a while since I've talked to him. And as you guys know, if you're the first time kind of watching an episode with Emmett has been on my channel many times. We talk about trading, we talk about Tesla, we talk about investing and current events, what's going on around the world. So I want to welcome you back, Emmett, to the show.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, good chatting again. And it's been a couple weeks, and yeah, you're getting closer and closer to that interview with Elon, I think.
Who knows? Lots of stuff has been going on the past few weeks, huh?
Yeah, it's been crazy. The earnings, and I'm happy my master of coin got asked. That was funny. And
I mean, we haven't talked in actually a while. I'm wondering, with the earnings, were you surprised at all with the stock price reaction going down, or was it just kind of expected for you?
I was a little surprised. I was surprised that it had such low volume. Like, did you look at the average volume earnings day to day after and the day after? I think it was below the daily average each of those days, or wasn't above by any meaningful amount. So very strange and odd. It feels like the calm before some type of storm, maybe hopefully an upward trajectory storm. but you never know. Like, it seems like the days of the, catalysts, are almost sort of gone. Like, you look at the big, you look at the big mega cap stocks, whether it's like Apple or Google or, Microsoft, sometimes they have a nice surprise earnings and there's like a 5% bounce or something. But a lot of times that it gives it back, and then it just kind of like stabilizes, and it just, there's like a rising tide, and it just goes up kind of slowly over that next quarter, but substantially, And it used to be the case with Tesla, they'd have some earnings, it would be up like 10% the next day, 10% the day after, and you'd be like, wow, it's like a rocket ship, or it'd be down 10 or 20% the next day, another day, it'd be like the opposite sometimes. And I feel like that crazy volatility is not as likely anymore in Tesla. Like, the last time we saw something like that, I feel like, was the S&P inclusion. There's a lot of movement around that and in and around that date. So it just seems like it's gotten big enough where maybe there's just not going to be some substantial lifts to the stock on some big news or some big thing. I don't know. Do you think that too? It's kind of reached this new maturity, or?
Yeah. I think, like, actually with Tesla, whenever, like, nowadays, they're showing their quarterly delivery numbers. Like, back in the day, this is like old school. Many years ago, they didn't have quarterly delivery numbers. They would announce that during the quarterly earnings, and that's when you had a lot of volatility, because no one knew what the delivery numbers were.
The P&D number. Yeah, that's a big difference.
But now, like, they are announcing the quarterly delivery numbers, and then everything's like, the most important figures already like done. Like, for example, revenue, you generally know how much, and then if they delivered a lot of cars, and they're going to have good profit, generally speaking. And so it seems like a lot of it is already kind of obvious, I mean, there's like a little bit of fluctuation, a couple hundred million dollars here and there, but it doesn't really impact, I think, the longer term story. So I think, it's like, there could be a lot of hype for earnings, but I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's going to be the most impactful thing, it seems like, with Tesla nowadays.
Yeah. That makes sense. The purchase and delivery number is kind of like, that was the most important thing. And then you're kind of waiting for the gross margins. That's the next most important thing, I think, that you find out in the earnings report,
I'm curious, because we haven't talked actually probably after, since deliveries. I mean, were you surprised with deliveries? The stock, didn't go up that much. And then now you have earnings. The stock didn't go up that much. It went, it kind of went down a bit. Tesla blew out delivery numbers, 185,000 cars, but the stock price is just barely reacting to it. Great, decent earnings. I don't know, were there things about earnings that concerned you at all as an investor, or that you picked up as red flags that could kind of, balance things out, or what's going on?
Nothing too major. I mean, I'm surprised the stock isn't 100 points higher, at least, than it is after, the release of their deliveries and production, April 1st or 2nd. And I bought some short-term calls then that were like a month or a few weeks out, and those are about to expire worthless, I think, on this Friday coming up. And so, I don't make good trades all the time. I make bad trades a lot, but I do it with a small amount of capital. And Yeah, so it surprised me, and I thought, I think a lot of people thought the stock was going to start taking off again, and it just seems like when we all think the same thing, a lot of times the opposite happens. It's so weird, and then now we think it's like cooled off, and it's probably going to start rising like quickly, and we're like, what? Now it's going up, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
but
we,
there was nothing too. Yeah,
yeah. No, we've seen that. I've seen that over the years many times. You know, it's like everyone's so sure it's going to go up, it doesn't, but then everyone's so sure it's just going to consolidate for many years, I think, and then it changes.
Yeah. Well, was there anything concerning to you about the earnings report in particular? I mean, I know you talked about it in a couple of your videos already.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it overall. I mean, I think it seems like Tesla's executing. I think Elon did give a few kind of concerning kind of more short-term things, like over the next 6 months. So like 4680 cells were maybe not producing as much as they'd like, or for example, the Model S and X is kind of a slower rollout than expected. Yeah, it seems like Solar Roof is rough for them, and they lost a lot of money trying to ramp that up. And so there's just these little things.
Early on, when they first acquired Solar City, and we were talking about things, and you were not excited about the Solar Roof or the Solar City acquisition and Solar Roof prospects, at least. I remember talking to you on like TM's Tesla Motor Club forums or chatting on the events and stuff. And yeah, I remember you were thinking like, yeah, this is not going to be efficient. This is not going to work so well. And I was like, what do you mean? This is a solar, this new invention. It's going to be amazing. But you were much more conservative, and you turned out to be, it's going to take longer than expected to kind of ramp that up efficiently.
Yeah. I mean, I saw the potential. I just thought it would take a long time to ramp and figure out, because when I looked at it, I immediately knew how complex this was, like back in, I think, 2016 or something,
you even mentioned at the time. Now I look back and I remember you said that, like, well, maybe if they can figure out how to like have robots do it in some automated way. And back then I was like, you're crazy, man, a robot. But now it's like, maybe they will have robots. Yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, I mean, that seems like to be the end all efficient way to do it, is have some kind of robotic, because the roofers on my roof, they're great, but there's like teams of like 10 people over 3 weeks that were like working hard.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, you just finished your solar roof install from Tesla, right? So did it really take 10 people 3 weeks? Or I mean,
I think so. About really? 10, it was like two different teams. There was like a teardown / prep team that took like a week and a half. And then there was like another team that is in charge of like installing the roof and putting finishing touches that took another like week and a half. And they're each like 10 people or so. And yeah, it was, I mean, I have a bigger house now with a bigger roof, but, I don't think it should have taken three. But, they're working out the kinks, and my roof's, it looks plain, but I think it was more complicated than they thought, and I think that turns out to be the case with a lot of the roofs they're figuring out.
Yeah. So you got, six power walls, is it?
Yeah, six power, and the power wall was super smooth. That took like a day and a half to put the six power walls in with the inverters and, all that. And six power walls, yeah.
Cool. And then any update on your new Model S? You ordered, right, the refresh. So is any word?
No update yet. Nothing. I've been meaning to call them because I want to see if I can get it updated to the 7-seater option. I know Elon tweeted a picture a month or two back that, the 7-seater option's back for the Model S or something with the plaid version, I think. But I don't see it on the website. So I got to see if they can change it, because I have three little kids, and they love that back seat of the Model S when I had it a few years ago. It's like a roller coaster, especially in the plaid. It'll be a thrill.
Seriously, are you getting the plaid or just the regular? Or
yeah, I'm getting the plaid.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Not the plaid plus. Just
okay,
the plaid.
Just plaid.
Yeah.
Okay.
But still, it's like, I think it's like 1.99 seconds, 0 to 60. Yeah.
Wow, crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, yeah. I'm happy with just like a 4.5 second, 0 to 60 speed. So Elon Musk is going to be on Saturday Night Live. My wife was kind of concerned that she's been reading these articles that there's been some Saturday Night Live, comedians, actors that don't like the fact that Elon's going to be on the show. And she's concerned maybe the stock price might get hit. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think it's just kind of noise. There's these editors at these publications looking for anything clickbait they can. Elon or Tesla and fire, people hating Elon, anything like that can be in a headline of an article. That's instant clickbait. you know, right there. It's like chum for us consumers to click on, you know? And so I think they just quickly, you know, whenever there's a new host that no, they've never had before, I bet there's always a couple of Saturday Night Live, you know, staff members that might react a little strangely, you know, because it's like a new host that's never been on. They're like, oh, this guy, I don't know, you know, and probably a couple staff members I know on Twitter or some Instagram or something said something like, when he said it's like, it's, let's find out how live it is. And then one guy said like, what the F does that mean?
Yeah.
But that could be interpreted as like a joke. Like, hey, what does that mean? You know, it doesn't mean like F you, what are you talking about? You know, but then some editor guy probably said, oh, let's turn this into a story. And then talk to Lauren Michaels, the guy who like runs Saturday Live, and the guy, and said, do all your staff members have to, you know, participate no matter what, no matter who, how controversial. And he's like, no, I never force them to do anything. They don't have to, they don't. And so they turn that quote into like a headline, like some staff members don't have to or may not join Saturday Night Live, you know, just got out of hand real quick. And then people run with that headline and everyone's like, oh, no, no, Saturday Night Live is going to boycott Elon, or it's just like crazy. And it's like just epitome. That's just a perfect example of the fake news clickbait headline era we're in. It's kind of nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to, I think Elon's going to do a great job on Saturday Night Live.
I think so. I mean,
it's like, it's totally his element, you know, just like the a funny skit, you know, if he does a monologue, that'd be fantastic too. I mean, just, yeah, I haven't watched Saturday Night Live in ages, but you know, I grew up on that stuff. So it'll be fun watching it.
It seems like over time it just gets worse, but maybe I'm just getting older. I don't know. When I was younger, yeah, I watched it a lot. It was hilarious. It was like back when they had Chris Farley, Adam Sandler, David Spade, you know, that was priceless, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So JSA on Twitter, or actually I posted asking YouTube subscribers questions to ask on this discussion here. So JSA says, your thoughts on the Coin Master's response to your earnings question. So for those who aren't aware, Emmett had a question that Zach Kirkhorn, the CFO, answered on Tesla's earnings call. And it was basically, Master of Coin, can you tell us anything about Tesla's future plans for digital currency, et cetera? And Zach answered the question. I mean, can you kind of, I mean, what did you take from Zach's answer there?
Yeah, well, I thought a couple things. First of all, the context of the call, it was interesting because I feel like it was one of the first earnings call I can recall where Elon was clearly not in the same room as his, you know, as his comrades. You know, like they were in one room and he was like in Austin on dad duty or something with the baby, you know? Yeah. Distracted somewhat, right? And I can't remember a case where he was like clearly, it was so clear that he was like somewhere else physically. So that probably changed the dynamic of how they were handling the whole call to begin with. But I feel like Zach's answer, like his immediate, like kind of taking that over, and his answer seemed like somewhat prepared, like with some highlight points or something about Bitcoin. And I feel like he had to get that approved by Elon ahead of time. Like, you know, Elon Musk might not have time to look through all the questions that are going to be asked, but I bet Zach Kirkhorn or someone there is in charge of like, all right, let's do the top questions and say we're going to be asked. And someone brought to Zach's attention, like, hey, this question is going to be asked. And then he's like, well, let me prepare something. Let me get to Elon. Elon has to like fine tune it and add or take away and send it back to Zach. And Zach has his bullet points, you know, because he's very in control of a lot of this information. Right. And so that's my interpretation of how it went down. And Zach kind of answered like the Bitcoin bullet points that they wanted to get across, even though it wasn't specifically about Bitcoin. But then he also added that tidbit at the end of kind of leaving it open and ended, like, that's why I added the second part of the question. Can you tell us when you might have some, you know? And so they did address that nicely and in a way where they didn't deny it. They just didn't confirm it either. They said like, well, we will let you know when we have some further development. Like, it seemed like it left the door wide open that there's something going on. There's something cooking. And that's what we've been speculating, right? So we're just kind of like getting the breadcrumbs here of the trail and trying to pick up on it. And I think it'll become more clear over time. But yeah. What interpretation?
Yeah. So when Zach Kirkhorn answered, you know, the question, I was surprised because he sounded like he's really into this crypto stuff. Like, he's really into Bitcoin. Like, it wasn't something that just pushed on him. And I think he really is like trying to be the master of coin, you know? And I was kind of surprised, like, whoa, you know, I didn't expect that. But it does seem like, you know, he's really involved. It seems like he's very knowledgeable. And it seems like they're exploring a lot of things. And they're moving fast too, right? They bought $1.5 billion of Bitcoin, but then they sold 200 something, you know, million of Bitcoin, just test it out. And so they're like, yeah, they're moving pretty fast. Did you see that paper? There's a paper that Square and ARK Invest did, and Jack Dorsey tweeted it and some others from ARK, but it was this paper on how if you add Bitcoin mining to solar panel and battery storage, that you can basically like propel energy storage and solar panels like crazy, because what you do is you get that excess energy and you're monetizing it now with Bitcoin mining, and that allows you to basically scale, you know, as panels and storage. And so it's like, it seems like they're looking to do something in that field too, you know, with Bitcoin mining.
So basically the concept is it's going to incentivize more people to buy this because it makes more monetary sense to get it, right?
Where because there's
kind of mine the Bitcoin on the side with it.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's a limitation to in a lot of areas of how much the utility can take back, you know, in terms of energy, and then net metering rules are all kind of all over the place. They're kind of going away too. And so you've got this kind of this extra energy, you know, that, and the idea is you can actually over kind of build your solar panels in a sense to create extra energy, use that for mining. But then it works out in the bigger picture where this actually speeds up adoption by a tremendous amount. And it could like basically replace fossil fuels like much faster.
Much faster.
Yeah, yeah. That's the theory. And I think did Elon like it, or I forget, there's something like where it was Square and ARK Invest, but then like I could see like Tesla's.
They put the paper together, but I've seen this theory being floated about. I think Matt, who's on Twitter, who does Spark Spread, I think he floated out kind of a theory about that too. And I've seen it floated around a couple times, and it makes sense. You know, on one hand, people are like, what do you mean? You're just going to, you know, burn more energy doing Bitcoin mining? That doesn't make sense. But on the other hand, I think you have to look at it like, well, no, you're going to really speed up the adoption of the regenerative energy, you know, the batteries and the solar, because people are going to want to use it to do Bitcoin mining, and when it's profitable for that. So you're going to have much more kind of like capacity to generate energy in a sustainable way, you know? So yeah, it seems like a very fascinating development that hasn't been talked about until like the last month or two, I feel like.
Yeah. The past week or two after and before earnings, actually, there's been a bunch of kind of discussion in the Tesla community about FUD and how to fight FUD. Mm-hmm. Does Tesla need a PR department? Do they need something else? I mean, what's your take on kind of what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, Elon, he seems pretty clear that he doesn't want a PR department. I disagree. I mean, I don't. Usually I take whatever Elon says as like fact or truth, and then have to try to disprove it if I'm going to disagree. But in this case, I just think from a human psychology point of view, you know, that these clickbait art, we haven't, as a population, we haven't really adjusted to the way news is spread with clickbait, you know, headlines yet. You know, as much as many of us talk about it, how disruptive and annoying it is. And, you know, I think everyone has some awareness. It still affects many people, especially on topics you're not aware of at all. You know, like we're very aware of Tesla and electric vehicles, but like when you see headlines about other things I'm not aware of, whether it's like dangers of, you know, the ocean coral reefs or something, I'm not like very up to date on the knowledge. Like I tend to believe the headlines in a way, you know, and so where I tend to just look at them and take them for what they are. Just, I don't read into those articles and like try to figure out, hey, is this true or not, you know? And so I think there's a lot of people that aren't in the Tesla space that see these headlines and are affected and psychologically by it, you know? And I'm just worried that the politicians are going to seize on that opportunity, you know, and try to pass some kind of like emergency measure to shut down full self-driving software, order Tesla to do a recall until they investigate further, like the Boeing Max thing. And maybe that was rightly, you know, the Boeing Max 737 or whatever, you know, shut down for a while. Maybe that was rightly, I don't know the specifics enough on that myself, but I know it took like 2 years for them to do their investigation and make whatever fix that the regulatory agencies were happy with. And so I'm just worried something like that could happen with the first Tesla crash. I mean, this crash in Houston wasn't even an autopilot crash, and it's being perceived by everyone as one, right? so that's already strike one, even though it wasn't. We know it wasn't. Everyone who knows Tesla knows it wasn't, but it's still seen as already strike one in people's minds because the damage has been done, you know? Mm-hmm. So if there was just some kind of like, maybe there could be like an official Tesla PR Twitter account, you know, if it's not Elon himself, just something like that. Everyone can see the, you know, Tesla's response immediately, and news journalists can quote immediately, you know, and for everyone to see. So it can't easily be misinterpreted, you know. It probably shouldn't be Elon personally. But maybe someone he can trust, you know, to handle that kind of responses. It just seems like you got to pick the lesser evil here, and the lesser evil to me is doing that than not doing it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's my opinion, and I thought about it a lot, and I just think there's a risk, and it's mm-hmm. not necessary to take this risk. You could lower the risk, you know. Mm-hmm. The risk of doing it is very, you know, minimal compared to not doing it, in my opinion. So, you know, I know you're kind of – you kind of trust Elon's judgment, I think, right, on this, and you're kind of in his boat, but that's what I.
Yeah, I mean, like back, you know, just a few years ago, so, you know, at the height of kind of the whole Model 3 ramp FUD in 2018, I was like really, really adamant that Tesla needed to, what I called, you know, take back the narrative. Like they needed to, you know, decide what's being talked about and how it's being talked about, because the press was just completely going off on this narrative that Elon was crazy, Tesla's going bankrupt, you know? And I'm like, you know, Tesla needs to reach out and say, hey, you know, like that's not what's going on here. And I had all these ideas. I was writing about it, you know, online at Tesla Motors Club and other stuff. And
I remember,
And I was like, this is the obvious thing to do. You know, Tesla needs to fight back. And I think what I realized through that whole experience was a few things. Elon didn't raise funds until really late, too. It was like April of 2019. And he should have, I think, or could have raised earlier. I think all of that taught me like, hey, Elon's going to do something his way. Like he's going to, and part of his way is at times it's the riskier way. Like sometimes if it's in a way, I feel like he's cut out where he wants to do it in a way that is right, you know, not just mm-hmm. the safest way. He wants to do the right way, even if the right way is riskier, you know, he wants the story to be like something that he's proud of, you know? And I think with this whole self-driving and also fighting the press and stuff, I think he's not scared at all. I think he's saying like, you know, first off with full self-driving, he's like, the data is going to be completely everything, you know? And he's saying that with regulators, he likes NHTSA, you know, and he thinks they're mostly right all the time, 99.9% of the time. So it's like, it's hard to argue with that because Tesla has probably had the most run-ins with NHTSA of any car company out there. Right. So they know NHTSA, and then, so Elon's confident that they're going to just look at the data. And then on the flip side, on the other side, it's like, it's like with the other FUD, it's like, is it hurting demand? You know, it's like Tesla's able to sell all the cars they can. And then you've got this EV tax credit. If the Biden tax credit passes and you have $7,500 or more of tax credit or rebates on Tesla cars, and if it's uncapped, like there is no demand problem, no demand issue. Right. And so
there's no demand issue.
So materially, like Tesla has reached a place where, you know, this FUD doesn't hurt Tesla like it did, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like one of those things where I kind of say, hey, if Elon wants to run with no press, no PR, hey, you know, let him do what he wants to do. Like there's one thing if like the CEO is doing stuff that's fundamentally, you know, like capping the company, the potential of the company, then it's like, hey, you know, that's an issue. But if it's like a minor issue of just kind of like PR or not PR team or whatever, it doesn't change the long-term trajectory. I say, let Elon be Elon and do what he wants. Even though I agree with you, it does increase the risk a bit, you know, in terms of Abe.
Full self, I think it's the full self-driving adoption, you know, curve that could be risked, like as to coming later than it otherwise could. That's my feeling. But the demand, I agree. There's no problem with demand either way. They're going to sell as many cars as they can make for the next few years, at least, maybe till the end of the decade. And but the full self-driving perception and adoption, rather, you know, really, it's a, like if you have some crazy senators lobbied by Tesla competitors and big oil that try to force in a bill quickly after one or two crashes in a row, then they can maybe get it passed if there's like a public outcry. You know, I think, you know, a guy I follow a lot, Nassim Taleb, you know, and I reference him a lot. I forget the exact rule he calls it, but basically 10%, the minority is the one, you know, the 10% minority that's loudest are the ones that make the rules, you know? And so if you have this really loud outcry against Tesla's technology, it could be, you know, turn into like a public hearing and panic quickly to like say, oh, let's put this on hold for a while until we figure it out. Let's be safe. You know, that's how it could be framed politically. And who knows how long that could take to get through, right? I mean, hopefully it would be weeks, but it could be months or many or a year or two. I don't know. But
yeah,
that's just my worry.
I mean, I kind of look at it more like, I think with full self-driving beta, they'll keep it in beta. They'll have oversight. So you're, you know, just like navigate or autopilot on freeways. So it's the same concept. Yeah. They'll rack up millions of miles to show that, A, this is safer than without, you know?
Yeah.
And then when it transfers over to like unsupervised, and it'll be probably a little more gradual, but you know, Tesla will have the data to back that up. And so I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of right now I'm siding with Elon, you know, if he knows, like he knows NHTSA, he knows, you know,
he does know.
I mean,
this is one thing I'm thinking too. This is, I don't know. This is kind of borderline conspiracy thinking, but do you think Elon has like a secret, almost like a bat phone to the White House, you know, ever since the Donald Trump era when, you know, he was like SpaceX, and you think they like granted him like, all right, Elon, he's our top guy in the country doing stuff. He has a secret connection with us. Anytime he wants, he can call the president for something, you know. Do you think he has something like that in his back pocket, like he's not allowed to talk about, or he wouldn't talk about, but like if something was getting really out of hand fast, he could call and be like, listen, Mr. President, or whoever the handler is of Biden or whatever, could say, listen, this is out of control right now. You got to have them focus on the data. There's public, you know, and it could get under control that way, do you think? Or
yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, like, for example, like there's definitely communication lines open with the White House and Elon because, you know, he's visited, he's met with Trump, et cetera, a few times. I mean, they weren't at the best of relations, but, you know, he's going to have the phone number of like the chief of staff or some, you know, someone to communicate with. And so I would think so. Yeah, definitely.
And if they say the White House, Elon Musk is calling, I think they would take it right away.
Yeah.
Versus like, Mr., you know, Mary Barra is calling from GM. I think they're like, send her to voicemail.
You heard about that.
You already bailed them out.
You heard about Tim Cook not taking, like, refusing Elon Musk's call, right? Like,
yeah, that was a few years ago. Yeah, yeah.
And then,
biggest regret. Yeah, it's probably.
Yeah, and then he was asked about it in an interview, Tim Cook.
I heard that. Yeah.
And it was funny. Like,
sidestepped it, right?
He totally sidestepped it. He's like, he said, Tesla is doing, you know, some interesting things.
Yeah, he totally sidestepped it. I mean, yeah. That just shows Apple, you know, they've done really good and over the years, but I don't think they're going to get past. This is sort of like the peak of their business right now, and I can't see them getting much bigger. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think Apple could be bigger. We'll see. I mean, it's if you think about 5 or 10 years down the road, there isn't much stopping Apple, in my opinion, because they own the whole interface. They own the interface
lose these suits against like Epic and like whoever, then that's I think the start of the decline of Apple if they are forced to like give up on the kind of monopolistic things they have with their ecosystem.
Yeah, I think the App Store is the one concerning thing of them, you know, sticking with 30%. I think they should drop it to 15 and make a long-term goal to 10% and they'll be fine, but yeah, we'll see. Tesla XYZ says, what are some short to medium term price catalysts you are most excited about with Tesla TSLA movements? Possible stock split, deferred tax credit, full self-driving, etc. Do you have any in your mind?
I mean, deferred tax credit is a big deal that the Biden, is about to hopefully pass. Everyone's talking about obviously the full self-driving button that everyone will have that Elon's talked about a few times. You know, all these things are great marker. Like the full self-driving is the most symbolic change. I just don't know if it'll be an actual catalyst for the stock immediately. You know, it might take months for the stock to kind of figure it out, or you know, for the investor, institutional investors who kind of drive the stock price to kind of really come to terms with it. There's a brand new thing coming out here, technology, and there'll be that FUD that we were talking about, kind of trying to smear it as much as it can and reverse, you know, the option for that probably. So I think that's there's no real catalyst that I can think of. I think the stock is just as likely to go up 20% next week at this point on almost no news versus, you know, 10 or 20% on the next purchase, production delivery report, you know? So at this point, so big, like it's hard to tell what an actual catalyst would be, you know, back when it was a fifth or a tenth the size in market cap, like, yeah, like a big news headline can move it up or down 10 or 20% easily, but I just don't know if that's the case anymore.
Yeah. I'm calling the Biden tax credit the mother of all Tesla catalysts.
Okay.
And the reason is,
like, you think it'll be an immediate catalyst, or you think it'll take months to play out?
I think it's going to be. I think it's a multi-year, you know, catalyst in the sense if it's uncapped and if it's at least you know $5,000, you know, uncapped, where Tesla can sell as many cars as they can, let's say in a period of 4 years or something, right? Like, I think that is going to be, that's the mother of all catalysts.
It's unlimited demand, basically.
Exactly. And they could charge whatever they want. They could make as many, you know, cars, build a new factory, do anything they want during those 4 years. They're like assured, you know, every single car they sell is going to, every single car they produce is going to sell at good margins, right? And I think immediately they could actually raise their price a bit, you know, especially with the
increase
tax rate.
They can
increase their margins. It will just give this huge ramp forward, like 3 or 4 years of just like, you know, just confidence to investors. I think, I'm not sure like short term, how much of that will be brought forward. You know, investors will say, the next 3 or 4 years is going to be awesome. But I think there could be some of that, but I think generally speaking though, you know,
it's great news long-term.
Yeah, definitely.
More security in the bull case. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, before the call, you were talking about a potential options play that you're considering. So do you want to explain kind of what that option play is?
Sure. So this is not like a short-term call option play like I've done before, or even a long-term call. This is more of like a selling a put option, but a long-term put option. So it's something new to me, but I've been looking at it and thinking about it and kind of getting closer and closer to doing it in my own account as sort of a conservative bullish play, you know? And so, you know, I think I've shown you the numbers. And as of when I looked at it last on Thursday, this is before the stock moved up $30 on Friday, but on Thursday, the 1,000 strike puts for Tesla that expire in June of 2023. So it's over 2 years from now. So those were trading at around $485, almost $500 a contract, let's say. Okay, so if you sell those, right, then as long as Tesla is above $500 by June of 2023, you make some money. If it's above $1,000, then you collect the whole $500 premium, you know? And to me, the Interactive Brokers Probability Lab, which shows the probabilities of where the options are, based on where the options are priced, what the mathematical probability is for a stock to get to a certain point at that expiry. And based on those calculations, mathematically, the options are stating that there's like a, I think it, what was it, 80% chance or something that Tesla would not be above $1,000. And that just seemed kind of ludicrous to me. Like, I was like, man, I think it's more like an 80% chance it will be above $1,000, not the opposite. And so I was like, how do you take advantage of that? So I started thinking about it and I was like, well, I could sell those put options, you know? because I'm not so sure. We've talked about it. You know, Tesla's grown so much. The stock price has grown so much in the last year or 18 months, 10x, you know. It's like, how much can it's not going to 10x again. We're pretty sure of that, but it might double, maybe, you know, it might triple, best case, in my opinion. But I don't think it's going to go up like 5x again or 10x like it did, you know. This is such a big market cap. Like, for it to go up, you know, 5x, it would be like bigger than Microsoft, Apple, and Google combined. Yeah, like that in such a quick time, it seems like unthinkable. And it could. I'm not saying it can't happen, but it just seems low probability in my case. In 2 years, you know. So selling these puts, you know, the amount of equity you have to put up for, like, let's say, you know, one contract, which is 400. It's $48,500 that you collect in premium. You have to put up like $18,000. You know, you can't use that money. That money's on the side, but you also have to put up like $18,000 or $19,000 of margin. But then you probably want more than that as a buffer in case for volatility, if the stock's going to go down 20-30% temporarily or whatever. So maybe you want $25,000 or $30,000 at the most, you know. So you put up, you know, 25,000, let's say, for one contract, and then you're collecting about almost $50,000 of premium. And over 2 years, as long as the stock is above 1,000 or at 1,000 or above, then when you close the contract and you collect that full, you know, $50,000 premium, well, your $25,000 freed up too. So you just collected, you know, 200% kind of on that $25,000 deposit that I'm thinking of it in terms of. As the margin buff with the buffer I would want on it, you know? So it seems like a really good return opportunity for sort of like a more conservative play. And so if you think about that $25,000, if you bought Tesla stock with that instead, right, and you just held the stock, well, to get a 200% return, to turn that into $75,000, the stock would have to go to from $700 to $2,100, you know? So really, the amount of capital you're using, in my mind, if you for that amount of capital, if Tesla is below $2,100 by June of 2023, then you're making a better return on that capital selling these put options, in my opinion, than buying the stock and just holding the stock. You know, assuming you're buying the stock not on margin, maybe you buy the stock on margin instead and have a better return. But you know, we don't endorse margin. This is a highly risky, like, option trade. I'm just kind of throwing it around in my mind right now, trying to get comfortable with it. And I might try to do it in my IRA account with a spread. So I'd like, you know, with the IRA accounts, you can't use any margin, obviously. And so you have to hold the whole cash. So if I sold $1,000 put, I'd collect the $500 premium, but I also, you know, I'd collect the $50,000 premium, but I'd have to put up $50,000 on top of that so that it's a whole fully cash secured put. But instead, I could buy like the 250 put for 2 years out for like $25 or something like that. And that would be it would lower the cash requirement on the IRA account significantly. So I might do it in that account just because there's no tax consequences of getting out of some of my Tesla. And I wouldn't do it with my entire account. It would be like a quarter or half my Tesla position would go into this type of trade, where the other would just be shares long term, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it's just something I'm thinking about. It seems like a good risk reward, given that I don't think that stock is going to like triple from here anytime soon. It could, but you know, I just don't think it will. It might go to 1,000 plus, but yeah, I don't know. I talked for a long time.
No worries.
So, yeah, questions that didn't make sense.
So let's unpack this for people a bit. So, I mean, first of all, this is, you know, not investment trading advice at all. This is just a trade that Emmett is considering himself, right? Not suggesting to anyone. So let's unpack this for folks a bit to understand. So when you're selling a 1,000 strike put, you're basically entering a contract where if the stock price is under $1,000 coming, let's say come June 2023, that basically you'll buy that stock for $1,000 off that person who bought the put from you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say hypothetically, the stock is at $700 in June 2023. Now you're forced to buy their shares at $1,000. Yeah.
And I could sell it to me for $700 for a $300 loss on that trade, but exactly. I still collected the $500 premium. So net, I collected $200.
Exactly. So, but in the beginning, when you sold that put, you made $500 per share, right, off of that contract. Mm-hmm. So you're able to absorb the cost all the way down to, if Tesla went to $500 June 2023, you come out break even. If it goes lower, now you're hitting a loss. But then if you compare it with stock, you're hitting a loss as well too, right?
Yeah, you're hitting a loss if it goes below $700 with a stock. So even if it goes to like $600, you made money with the put, versus if you had the stock, you lost money. So you're absolutely right. If it goes below like $400, $350 or $400, then you would lose more money doing this put trade than just holding the stock and until it's below. But then you buy the, you know, with the IRA account, for example, if you buy the if you do a spread and you sell the 1,000 and buy the 250 strike put, then you're really limiting your downside significantly. Mm-hmm.
And then if the stock, let's say, is 1,000 or more June 2023, then you're basically, you know, you come out free. You don't have to fork over anything. You just, you know, keep the collected premium, right? The $500 per share before.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And so with shares, you're thinking, hey, with shares, if it's over 2,100, then shares would be a better idea. But you're thinking, hey, that's kind of not likely.
High in the sky thinking, in my opinion. And then, unless self-driving becomes to like amazing right off the bat, but I think it's going to just be a slower adoption and take than people think.
And then with calls, you're thinking that it's the risk reward isn't there. You're not expecting, you know, this rapid share appreciation, you know, by that time. So calls, it seems like it would be too risky for you, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I haven't looked at the June 2023 calls, and you know, yet. But yeah, I would imagine, you know, if you wanted to buy like the 2000 June 2023 calls, they'd be like a couple $100 each or something, you know, they wouldn't be like super cheap. So you'd really need it, you know. So to me, like, to get that type of return on that, you'd have to really hope the stock's going to get to like 2500 plus, you know, like you'd have to expect that. And that's a lofty expectation. It could happen, you know, I'm not saying it's not, it could very well happen. It might be like, in my mind, 25 to 50% chance. That's significant, you know? But I also think it's like a 50% chance that it's going to be below 2,000, you know, and maybe like a 25% chance it'll be around 1,000, between 1,000 and 1,500, you know, or 800 and 1,500 2 years from now, you know? Just because we've been in, you know, like 2014 and 2019, Tesla did amazing things, and it was growing like 50 or 60% per year, even from 2014 on in terms of production. Everyone, me and you, we all saw like, hey, writing's on the wall, like this is going to be huge. It wasn't until 2019 that it finally broke out and popped, you know, and maybe it over popped, right? I mean, that's how stocks sometimes are. They don't just stay in line with the business, you know, they're a funny thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit before the show about just taxes. If you put on this trade, if you do sell some Tesla, you might have to pay taxes on that. And then on the premium, you're going to have to pay taxes, I guess, after you exit, right? You close the trade, right? Whenever. It could be June 2023 or it could be before that, but you're going to have to pay taxes off of that. I mean, is it worth it? I mean, this is something I guess you're wrestling with, right?
I'm really, really contemplating. I mean, in my personal account, it's a tough decision because, I'd have to pay significant taxes right off the bat selling, you know. But if this is the last year before capital gains are going to meaningfully appreciate to be closer to parity with just regular income tax, then it makes sense to sell something at this discounted tax rate sometime this year with a portion of my position. And then what would I do with that capital? And I'd pay up the taxes on that, but I'd have some more capital, and maybe this is something I'd do with that extra capital. And then that's why I'm also thinking in my IRA account. But then with the IRA account, they have to be cash secured puts if you're selling puts, or you can make it a put spread, which is what I'm thinking. So if I buy like I was looking at the 250 strike put, which I think is like impossible to get that low. But if you buy that put for $25 or $28, I think it costs something like that, then basically you don't have to put up nearly as much cash in your IRA account to keep the position on, you know? So, it just seems like, in my IRA account, it could be a much bigger deal to do with like half my Tesla shares, just kind of liquidate half of them and do that, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about it. And then I have my fund, and I'm, you know, I don't know if I would do it in the fund or not. You know, we're sort of aggressive. We don't really do as much Tesla stuff in there as my personal IRA, because most people that invest in my fund already have significant Tesla investments outside, but it's still our highest name in the fund, but mm-hmm. it's not like the majority, like with my personal mm-hmm. IRA account.
Sure. I wanted to ask you actually about the capital gains. So with Biden, you know, they're discussing this whole, I guess, raising of the capital gains tax for those making $1 million or more to make it the same as income tax, which would be, you know, which they're going to try to raise, right, to 39% or so. Adding the Medicare surtax, so you're talking about 43-point-something%. State taxes, you know, California, 13%. So yeah. 50 something.
I think that's going up.
Yeah. They're
16%. Yeah.
They're talking about that stuff. So, does that change your thinking at all with investing at all? Like, you know.
Yeah. It certainly does. I mean, you know, it makes me consider more seriously Puerto Rico, for example. There's a big deal there, and lots of people are trying to convince me, oh, you got to check it out. You know, I got to get my wife on board first. She doesn't like to say, I got to just plan like a vacation there first and like mm-hmm. have a friend show us around that's already living there for tax reasons or something.
Mm-hmm. I hear there's a lot of Bitcoin folks out there.
Yeah. There's a lot of crypto people out in Puerto Rico. I heard there's like a crypto like community, like mm-hmm. town area, almost of all people that made fortunes on Bitcoin and crypto mm-hmm. that live out there now. Yeah. So yeah. But we talk about moving to Texas a lot just to save, you know, 15% right off the bat if you do that. And then, we're looking into this thing called a NING trust, Nevada Incomplete Non-Grantor Trust. We're looking into it. I don't like all this paperwork and all these things, but it's like if you're like worth a certain amount and you're not doing it, you're the one that's not the fool, but you're like, everyone who's worth a certain amount or more is like doing that type of stuff to like avoid the state income tax with a portion of their wealth or whatever, you know, in California, for example, that's what I've heard. And so, I feel like pressured to do that stuff and I just hate that paperwork and I'm, you know, looking into it. So a lot of options we're looking at to try to lower the tax burden overall. But in the end, I mean, I'm grateful to get to where I'm at, you know, and if I have to give 80% of my wealth away to the government, it would be a bitter pill to swallow. But in the end, that's the pill to swallow. You know, maybe I try to raise I try to maximize my foundation more. I would much rather donate money more cost effective, which is much more cost effective than give it to the government, you know, and so anyway, the capital gains definitely, like your question says, it affects the investing mentality a lot. Like when the capital gain, like just this change in capital gains is more so than the overall capital gains. I think like it sort of put pressure on you to sell some positions earlier than you'd want to, just because you want to kind of get this lower rate while you still can, you know, it's like a sale before it goes up. Yeah. Right.
Do you think it seems like the general consensus is, you know, the 40, whatever percent, or 39 point whatever percent plus Medicare won't pass. It'll be maybe lower, right? Maybe
yeah, I hope
something
so.
At 26, 20, 28, 30% or something, right?
25 or 28, I would be happy. And I was it wouldn't really affect me. I'd just be like, all right, an extra 5% mm-hmm. or whatever, you know. But if it's like 35% or 32 or, you know, in the 30s, it's kind of like, oh, it's a significant, very significant bump right there. It's mm-hmm. just like, yeah, got to try to do something to counter that.
Yeah. I mean, my concern overall is like more with future entrepreneurs. Like if you are, you know, perhaps the next Elon Musk type of entrepreneur and you're trying to start a company, if the US has like 44%, you know, capital gains tax, you might think twice, you know, about the US and there could be this alternative kind of Silicon Valley location, you know, that springs up with lower tax rates that could have a vibrant, you know, VC, you know, network, et cetera. And you might see some folks, you know, kind of bail to there, you know, and that's kind of like, I don't know. It seems like, you know, to equate capital gains with income equal to the same, it doesn't give the incentive for people to make super long-term bets. You know, like, for example, you're starting a company, you're not going to exit for another 20 years, but you don't want to pay over half for something, you know, your gains. When another country's tempting you with 10 or 20%, you know, capital gains. And so, that's kind
of
could
open the door for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And who would be, I wonder who that would be like, I mean, it seems like phase one is like Austin and Miami, you know, people are just kind of counteracting by being there more and more, you know, but like you said, at some point it's going to be, the U.S. is just too much, even at this zero state income tax, just the federal tax is too much for capital gains. What other countries, do you have any ideas what other countries you think it would be? Or?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I hear Singapore doesn't have a capital gains tax even at all. I mean, there needs to be that ecosystem, I think, you know,
I don't know what New Zealand's gains taxes are, but that's a really nice place to live, I hear.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what their tax system is like. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I'm not even sure they have capital gains tax there. don't quote me on it, but
I know there's some entrepreneurs in New Zealand. It's a kind of a budding place for entrepreneurs, but I don't know if it's just their native entrepreneurs or people moving there to kind of start businesses.
Yeah. I want to hit another options question. Ramesh Shah says, could you please discuss a bull spread for March 2023 expiry? I have a 500 to 1200 bull spread. Is this a good trade? Good gains if stock hits 1200? Obviously, we don't want to give specific investment advice, but like a bull spread.
So I guess he's long the call for 500 strike and short this 1200.
Yeah. That's basically. And what do you think of that trade?
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. It seems like a conservative play. I don't know the actual premiums of those contracts off the top of my head, but if I knew it, I'd have a better judgment, you know, gut feeling or whatever. But I do think the odds of Tesla, you know, I do try to figure out odds in my own head of what I think the stock could get to by a certain price and time. And I try to think in terms of market cap. So, you know, 1200 would be like just over a 1 trillion market cap, I guess. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like 1.1 trillion or something, I think. So I think 2023, I think the odds of that are like 65% chance that it's going to be over that, you know, March 2023, you know, and I think, I put the 50-50 mark, you know, I try to start with the 50-50, like what's the 50-50 spot in my head is like for March 2023 is like between 1.5, a little more than 1.5 trillion, maybe that's in my head, you know, just like, okay, I think in 2 years it should be 1.5 trillion or more, 50% chance in my head, you know, so I don't know if that do with that what you'd want, but that's kind of where I put the 50-50 mark. Yeah. But so 1200 seems like easily it'll get through that more easily than maybe you'd want to put that. Maybe you'd want like the 1500, 500 spread or something like that. I don't know. That's what I would think. In my
I think when I look at that, that spread, I would be kind of scared if it was my entire portfolio on it, just because it's betting on either stability or up scenario. Yeah. It's not betting on kind of a down scenario, right? Where Tesla trades, let's say it ends up, you know, 450 or something, you know, in 2 years, then you lose your entire, you know, everything. And so, it's definitely a risky play in some ways. I mean,
for sure.
Yeah.
Those spreads can be risky. I'm not a big fan of spreads overall. I think I said that before, but you know, I just talked about potentially doing one in my IRA account, obviously, but overall, I'm not a fan of spreads in general.
Yeah. David Wildby says, now that the hype around Roblox IPO subsided, are you still bullish in buying? What is your bull thesis and price target on it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm bullish on Roblox, the metaverse. You know, we'll see. I think the earnings is Monday, May 10th. So I'm looking forward to that, to see what metrics they put out. Their daily active users, you know, monthly active users, you know, I think it's growing. We'll see if it's growing faster than, you know, Wall Street is sort of expecting. And the algorithms kind of pick up on it and buy more quickly or not. Like catalysts we're talking about, right? Like Roblox is at the size at like 45 billion. Like there could be real catalysts in this stock, you know, one way or up or down, not just up, right? So I feel like a really good earnings report could boost that stock quickly, like 10 or 20% within a day or two. You know, and so we'll see. It could also drop at 10 or 20%. It's a risk, right? So I think in my head, with the probability, I think it's 50% chance within 2 years, Roblox is 100 billion or more. That's my kind of 50-50 metric in my head. You know, I don't have some quant model I'm deriving that from. I'm just thinking of how the market values things. And based on today's current macro market environment, you know, I don't see how Roblox couldn't be significantly bigger 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. So that's just what I base it off of. Yeah.
I'm still kind of, I think in the kind of, I need to be more convinced of Roblox. I mean, it seems like a great company. I like what they're doing. I like, you know, for me, their key insight is the whole safety, right? They want people on their platform safe. And I think that's overlooked. And I think they're just going to ride the technologies of the metaverse. They're going to have higher fidelity over time, more engagement. I think higher fidelity will lead to more engagement, and higher fidelity is inevitable because technology is just getting better. So I think they have all the pieces long-term. Like I'm not going to bet against them. It's just, I don't know. There's something, I don't know. Your kids play Roblox.
They do a lot. So I'm biased a little bit. I know because I see my kids and their friends all play it. And I played it with them.
So, I mean, it's like, I mean, what percent of the games do you think on Roblox are just like, I don't know, not very helpful or healthy for your kids?
a lot of them are not. What is the social thing? It's like they're like having social hour the new way, you know, in a virtual way, you know, in a safe, like you said, that's the key, safe virtual way that the parents can feel like it's safe, you know, and that's the appeal, and they're learning something social from it. You know, they may not be learning like, you know, school academic type stuff. But I feel like they're learning how to socialize together in the new way that the world's kind of evolving towards. And I don't know if people realize that so much, but I think, you know, it becomes more apparent over time, and it's a safe way. Like you said, that's the key for them, is keeping it safe for the, you know, parents to feel comfortable letting their kids do it. And the kids spend a ton on, like, you know, it's like the number one allowance thing is to spend it on Robux these days. It's like crazy. But how far can that really go? I don't know. So they really have to try to attract an older audience too. And they're working on that. I think that's growing slowly. And that's going to be a key thing I'm looking at too, is the age demographics of their growth.
I mean, I was reading an article, I forget where it was, I think it was Bloomberg or somewhere, where it was talking about this husband-wife team that made a couple games on Roblox. They're doing very well. They're raising funds. And I was like researching, looking into their games, and one of the games was like this game called Traitor. And it's about this like carnival where you have to find this traitor and you have to kill the traitor. And so they have these like screenshots of, you know, of you going with a gun trying to kill this, you know, traitor in the carnival. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I mean, it seems like it's just like, fine, you want your kids to be safe, I guess, but safe doing what? Yeah. Like shooting people, like I don't know, man. It's like,
well, there's a new game that's like that called Among Us. That's like a really hot game. I think that's independent. It's not part of Roblox or Minecraft, but it's very similar. Like someone's an imposter killing everyone else. You have to find out who that is, but it's like super popular. It's a social game. So it seems like that Traitor is sort of like a play on that. Maybe. I don't know which came out first, but it's similar.
Yeah, exactly. I do have a position on Roblox. I'm actually slowly increasing it over time as I learn more, but it's still a pretty small position. Jonathan W. Stokes says Lemonade is adding auto insurance. In December, Dave, you said you think Lemonade could be 100x in 10 years. Are you still feeling bullish? Would love your and Emmett's analysis. Yeah, I am. I shared a video after that where I'm like, hey, I think Lemonade is on probation in my book because of their slow growth in Q4. And I'm like, hey, you know, we've got to deliver, you know, I think on growth. And until then, like, I'm in this limbo stage with Lemonade where I haven't sold my position or I haven't reduced it, but I'm just keeping it. But I am having question marks, and they have to prove to me over the next couple quarters that they've got what it takes to become this epic, you know, insurance company that's really disruptive. And yeah, so I'm not giving Lemonade the benefit of the doubt, meaning I am putting them to the test. They really have to deliver, you know, or else in the next couple quarters, yeah, I mean, I will pull if they can't deliver. But anyways, what's your take, Emmett?
Yeah, I mean, you've researched the company a lot more than I. You know, I've listened to several of their interviews, read reviews. I've tried it out a little bit. You know, I probably should just sign up for a Lemonade insurance just to like go through the whole experience myself too. But I do see potential. You know, like you said, I sort of want to give them the benefit of the doubt, unlike you, I guess, and think that, you know, it's a longer term play, and in 5 years, it'll be much more apparent that they're disrupting the entire insurance industry in a lot of ways. And so this auto, insurance is a huge step forward. And we'll see how it takes off. I was disappointed in the growth of the last quarter, but, you know, we'll see what this quarter, this marker shows, and the next one. But the crux of my kind of thesis on Lemonade is that they're building the backbone technology themselves in a way that kind of reminds me of what Interactive Brokers did in the electronic brokerage space, to compete with other like prime brokers and other retail electronic firms and kind of take over. But the difference is Interactive Brokers has grown very substantially over the years. But it's grown slowly. And the difference between Lemonade and Interactive Brokers is the user interface or the user experience. Like Lemonade, everything I've read says it's like so easy to sign up and use, super easy. They make it super well thought out user interface. Interactive Brokers is like the opposite, you know? So Interactive Brokers has this slow, clunky, like buggy interface that, you know, you have to sort of be a computer guy to figure out and do, you know? And if you're not, you just get frustrated and want to like give up and just, you know, it's not for you, you know? But Interactive Brokers still grew despite that, right? And so my view is like Lemonade, if they can be, if they are redesigning the backbone technology similar to what Interactive Brokers did on its own and making the user interface really good at the same time, that seems like a recipe for a much faster success than what Interactive Brokers has had. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's my kind of the crux of my thesis on Lemonade and my hopeful thesis. And in that case, I see the upside being huge potentially, like 10x, you know, in 3 to 5 years. And what's the worst case? I'm wrong and it goes to, you know, I lose the entire basis and it goes bankrupt or whatever, but a 10x reward possibility versus losing, you know, it's like flipping a coin, right? You know, if you flip a coin heads, it's, you know, you win 10x and tails, you lose everything you put into it. Obviously you're going to flip that coin as many times as you can. So it just seems like one of those opportunities to me that takes a few years to play out.
Yeah, definitely. Clarification. So actually I thought back in December, Lemonade could be 100x in 15 to 20 years, just for clarification, not 10 years. So I was actually thinking, I think one of the things that I think about, which is a bit unique, I think, is I'm actually thinking a lot about the 10 to 15 year period. Actually, maybe 10 to 20 year period.
And that's so hard to think about. Yeah. I can't even imagine more than 5 years, though.
Yeah. I never really like kind of got in touch with how unique that was just until like this past week when I was thinking about it, because I'm like, yeah, my initial Tesla investment was Model 3, about Model 3, but a lot of it was about the Gen 4 car, this ultra cheap car after that. But this was back like in 2012, 2013, I was like thinking, after 10 years, if they can, you know, make this Gen 4 car and then have a battery breakthrough in like 15 years or something, it could really set them up for 30 years of great growth. Like that's my mindset. But with kind of Tesla, what's interesting is I've always had this mindset where it's like Tesla is an EV company. It's like this great kind of runway, maybe 10 to 20 years of growth, right? And then after that, you've got this whole robotaxi, autonomous driving thing that's now going to give them another 10 or 20 years maybe of growth. So you might have like, you know, decent growth for another 15 years or so. And that's what I thought about. But then recently, you know, with this whole thing of Elon tweeting about real world AI and Tesla having to solve all this stuff, I'm thinking like he's signaling this, the next kind of big 10 to 20 year thing. And I think he's signaling the coming robot plus AI revolution, where he's saying, hey, like there's going to be this huge thing going on where after autonomous driving, we're going to now have this thing where robots become smart. Like you have AI and robots. And like you've watched those like Boston Dynamics, like YouTube videos, right? Yeah. So you've got these crazy robots, but they're just dumb robots. They can only do like certain dance moves and whatever, right?
Yeah.
But if you stick like AI in their brain, like, you know, and it gets smarter and smarter, and like they're able to do a lot of stuff. Like this is kind of crazy, like what's going to happen. And it seems like Elon is saying that this is the direction of Tesla, that Tesla
seems to say that.
Yeah, it's basically you have EVs is the stage one, let's say hypothetically. Stage two is this autonomous driving thing, right? And battery ramping and all this stuff. And stage three, it seems like it's this robot plus AI.
Yeah.
And that's kind of unlimited in a sense, you know? And we're just in the beginning of it. Like this is gonna this is gonna take decades to roll out, you know? This is like huge. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
No, I like where you're going, and I think it's going to take a long time to roll out or play out, and it's just still at the beginnings of it, right? It's we're in the first batter of the first, or maybe the second batter of the first inning or something. You know, we're really early on, and it's going to be all new industry. It's going to start with the robo taxis, like you said. Once I think we see how new industries pop up based on robo taxis, we'll see it. We'll have a better feel of other things, whether it's drones or other types of, you know, final last step from the driver to your front door. Maybe the robots come in your house and do something. I don't even know. It's like, I don't know if I want robots coming in my house to do things, but maybe that's the accepted way in the future. Like, you know, and it's going to be so crazy. I can't even imagine it. Like, you know, I'll leave it to you. I'm going to listen to your videos coming up. I think if you keep interviewing, you know, whether it's you or you and James or whatever, interview more like neural networks experts. I think it's really neural networks is the key innovation here. That I can imagine, at least. There's probably others, but it just seems like that's the key flip or switch to kind of turn all this possibility on. I was thinking about it. It's kind of like everything we envisioned the IBM Watson thing to be doing. You know, where'd that ever go? It's just some like novelty. You know, like I don't even know if Watson's used for much. Maybe it is. I don't know, but it doesn't seem like it's talked about ever at all, really, right? But it's like this centralized computer, and maybe this whole thing is sort of like what Watson was intended to be, but in the cloud that could be used from a variety of devices so easily. You know, and then you have the robots, all kinds that you can design that can be agile and go anywhere and do almost any function a human can do and much more, right? So it's going to just be incredible, the innovation that gets sparked. And it seems like Tesla could be at the forefront of this. And we're hearing all these new buzzwords like real world AI now, or, you know, shallow AI, you know, and it's like, what does that mean? You know, like we need people like you, Dave, to kind of like helpfully deep dive and kind of explain and detail these things, which I'm looking forward to because I know you will. Buzzwords are good, but I can't wait to hear you go into deep dives on each of these things.
Yeah. What's interesting is like, because, you know, everyone's been catching on this like real world AI lingo, and, you know, Elon's been like seeding this stuff and, you know, Tesla will be an AI company, you know, will be one of the largest like the AI companies.
I was like, what does AI mean? It means so many things in so many contexts.
Comparing them to Smoogle or, you know, Google. And, but like, you know, I had like back several months ago, you know, I'd started to put the pieces together. Like at an episode with James Damo where we talked about, you know, this Tesla humanoid, is that a possibility, right? But then it wasn't until like just this past like week or two, maybe past couple weeks, where I'm like, oh my gosh, like Elon is totally signaling, like he's completely giving the clues out for the next kind of, you know, huge 20 years for Tesla. And Yeah, he's laying it out. Like, he can't talk about everything because he doesn't like to talk about, I think, products that he doesn't have. Like, for example, robots. Yeah. He doesn't have the robots ready, you know? So he's not gonna be talking about stuff. He hates talking about stuff that he doesn't have, you know, he can't reveal, right? So, but he's signaling everything that's the direction that Tesla's going into. It's this robot AI, you know, emergence, right? That Tesla's gonna, you know, dive deep into.
If it really kind of can do this, it almost changes, in my view, the future of this Mars colonization he wants to do. You know, like if it's all right around the corner so much, like I would think that they'd be sending a lot more robots to Mars than people. You know, there might be a couple people to oversee the robots, but for the most part, there'd just be all these like robotic machines going to Mars, kind of digging things and putting together stuff and maybe, you know, solar powered robots or something. You know, it seems like maybe, you know, for me, that's the biggest change that I can see is that, you know, SpaceX will just send tons of robots to Mars instead of people, you know, and there'll be some people, but not until it's really ready, you know?
Well, like, think about it. They could send like not just robots to Mars, because like you could set up entire cities, right? But
yeah,
this robots could
then
be
later.
Robots could be the way that you go beyond Mars, you know,
yeah,
to other planets and stuff.
Yeah, and there's like science fiction books about that stuff, but it's like crazy that it's sort of becoming a reality, almost so close to being a real reality, you know, like these robots going to Mars, various moons, asteroids beyond the moon, our moon maybe, you know, just kind of like building these centers for humans to go safely and kind of if they want, or maybe not, maybe humans won't want to go and they'll just be happy with the robots going. I don't know. It's crazy.
Yeah. I want to encourage folks, if you haven't watched my interview with Will Summerlin, he's an ARK Invest analyst specializing in artificial intelligence. So I released part one over the weekend, and
part two coming out.
Yeah, it's coming out in a couple of days. But my main takeaway was, man, that he's such a smart guy. I was like really impressed. But his whole thing was, when you look at AI companies, like, so his premise is, the 2020s will be about data advantage, like. This is going to be the huge companies will win the decade because of their data. And then he says, how can you analyze your data? He says two things. One is, how hard is the data to acquire? And then the second thing is, where are the diminishing returns? Like, is it just after you a little bit of data, then you don't need any more data? Or do you really need all of the data, like, for the next 40 or 50 years, like, is that valuable, right? Yeah. And so he applied it to Tesla, and he's basically saying that, hey, this driving data is really hard to acquire. And the reason why he's saying it is, like, he said most driving is just pointless, it's useless data. But it's these edge cases, there's so many of them. Like, you think about millions or billions of cases that are so hard to find. And those are the super valuable cases. And you need scale. You need a ton of cars on the road to get those edge cases, which are super valuable. And then he's saying, like, the diminishing returns, it's like, he's saying autonomous driving is one of those things where you just can't solve it after just like a year of data. You actually, all of those edge cases improve the reliability and safety of driving. So it's almost endless. Like, you really need all of that data going forward. And in his opinion, he thinks it's actually like a competitive moat. He thinks it's a flywheel where the more, the better data, because it's so hard to get and so valuable, you put it into your, you know, neural nets, your systems, they get so much better. It gets more people to buy your product, to input more data, and you basically, others can't compete with you, right? And so he actually makes a strong case that autonomous driving is one of those things where it's not like others are going to catch up. It's really, you know, the
winner takes all.
Kind of, yeah.
Takes most. It's really like winner takes all.
Yeah. So it's definitely interesting stuff. And it's kind of convincing in some ways. Just like 6 months ago, I was thinking like, people are going to catch up. They're only a few years away. Like meaning like in 5 or 10 years, I was thinking, you know, others will catch up, or 10 years, right? I'm thinking others will be around the same type of performance as Tesla's, right? autonomous
But what if
driving.
Tesla is forced to share their data? Not forced, but what if they're kind of coerced? I think Elon would be open to it if it's going to accelerate electric vehicles too, don't you think? I don't know. Like China, for example, could put pressure and be like, "Hey, we need you to share your data with, let you keep operating here." But when and the U.S. could be like, I think there's already been kind of whispers of that. I feel like, but is there data? The question is, I guess, is the data Tesla has kind of like unique to Tesla's Dojo and their chip and their whole, circuit boards and everything, their whole vertical integration, or can it be easily, taken out of Tesla and plugged into General Motors systems and XPeng systems? I guess that's the question. Maybe Will, would he address any of that, or I
I mean,
wonder.
I think the way I took it was the data is more of these like really hard to find edge cases. Like for example, it's like he was talking about a blue stop sign in Hawaii or something. But like for example, you have a collection of 1,000 blue stop signs that might be
And
obscured
the data,
by, a
it all
tree.
like molds the neural network, right? All these weird edge cases are kind of molding the network,
Yeah,
the neural
exactly.
network, this certain thing. And can you, I guess, transport, can you export that certain neural network Tesla develops and evolves into XPeng, into GM,
Yeah. So, I
I want.
mean, so you can. So the idea is you train the neural network with all this data, right? All these crazy edge cases where, and other stuff, but it gets so good where you take the neural net. It's not that huge, and you could just take it and you can drive with it. You could put it in any car. It doesn't matter. But the thing is, someone can steal the neural net, but it doesn't matter because the next week or next month, Tesla is getting so much more data. In training their neural
We have
nets, it's
saved
going
them.
to be better than that old version a month ago, right? So
Yeah,
you
yeah.
need the
But the only
data.
thing there, you need the data, but at a certain point, like by the 0.99999, that extra nine is such like a small difference that even regulators might not notice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like
So
so.
how close are we to that point?
Yeah, so I'm
I
thinking
don't know.
actually that you go out a lot of nines, and I'm thinking it actually really matters. Like before, I was thinking, okay, fine, it's good driving. But then if you look at driving in terms of statistics, let's say how many accidents per, let's say, 100 million miles or per billion miles or something, right? Like all of those nines are really going to matter. Like, for example, would you like to ride in a GM that has like, 10,000 whatever accidents per billion miles, or a Tesla that has like one accident, in a billion miles. Like, or even if it's like 50 accidents in a billion miles versus one, right? That's huge. It's like, I mean, and that's what the nines are gonna do eventually. They're gonna actually make it that much more statistically safe for people.
I'm just saying, just to play devil's advocate, there's probably a point. I just don't know how close we are to that point where, the nines will, obviously you want the safest thing, but is it going to be one accident per billion miles or one accident per trillion miles? And at that point, it doesn't really make a difference, and are we going to get to that point in 5 years or 2 years or 20 years? I don't know. But there's some point where I'm just arguing it's such a marginal thing, no one's going to probably really care. I don't know. We'll see.
I think it's a dec it's like multi decades to get to
Yeah,
really
that'd be good
like
for Tesla if that's the case. Yeah, it'd be good for their long-term prospects. But I think overall the world would be a much safer place either way. It's I'm looking forward to the day when we're like, I can't believe we drove these death machines and they killed so many people per day and we all just accepted it, as a regular part of life, because it'll be so rare probably where these accidents kill people. It'll be like on the news, it won't just be a Tesla self-driving. It'll be like, oh, this car crashed and killed someone today in San Francisco or, Oklahoma City or something. It'll be like national news, and that'll be an exciting time. It'll be sad, those events, but it'll be exciting era we're in when it's like the big deal when there's a car crash that creates fatalities. Like it is now with planes. Didn't I think planes used to crash like much more frequently in like the 50s and 60s. Scary. But now it's like in the US at least the airlines are pretty much safer, and it's like once every few years. I don't know what the average is, but it's much less frequent, So yeah, we'll get cars hopefully to that kind of level of safety. It'll be exciting to get to that point, especially for our kids, not having to worry about, their peers or whatever driving drunk, for example, causing accidents with that, it'll be good.
I mean, it's interesting about like, would you send your kids in a autonomous taxi, which like that had a 100 deaths per billion miles versus 10, even let's say accidents, 100 accidents per billion miles versus 10 accidents per billion miles, like which one would you choose?
The 10,
It's
yeah, for
obvious, right?
sure.
It's like, but I mean that matters actually, you know? Like,
It matters, it matters. But also there's going to be an argue of statistics. Like you look in electronic brokerage, like because people will invent these new safety statistics and confuse people. Like you look in the electronic brokerage world, execution quality, you know, like that, I just know from that is so like, you're like, oh, we get the best price improvement on 80% of our orders and everyone's fooled like, oh, Ameritrade or Schwab is the best execution. They don't really realize they're selling the order flow and getting, you know. So I just feel like that same type of statistical meddling will happen. They'll both be relatively safe. It'll be hard to really, it might be hard for people. I mean, hopefully the data some people can look into and really under, hopefully Consumer Reports will be more honest about that type of data than they are with their tests. But what we, I you know, I just try to think of both sides, and it could be harder for most people to figure out, you know, with all the disruptive media and misleading statistics put out there by these companies that are all doing it.
Definitely.
So we'll see.
Definitely. Had a bunch of stuff, but I want to keep it generally to a reasonable time. We'll go ahead and I'm sure we'll continue this or continue another discussion at a later time. But fun stuff. We got a lot of stuff. Like every week is just every day is exciting. Lots of stuff going on as always. We'll go ahead and keep in touch and. I will be releasing my part two of Will Summerlin probably on Tuesday morning. I've got a couple other interviews lined up. I'm interviewing this co-founder of IOTA. It's a not blockchain, it's kind of crypto. I've got a Sandy Monroe interview actually lined up in a couple
Oh,
weeks.
nice. I like that guy. He's good. He's super on top of his game with everything Tesla and engineering and all this stuff.
And then I got a Gary Tan. Have you heard of Gary Tan?
I have heard of him.
He's an investor. He went early into Coinbase, made like over a billion or something off of Coinbase. But interviewing him in a couple of weeks too. So, fun stuff. But
That's awesome.
yeah.
All right. Exciting. A lot of good interviews coming up. I'm glad. I feel honored to be part of your regular interview process. I feel like I get to I try to interview you sometimes and ask you questions. So
It's definitely
I
fun.
gotta think of some new questions to ask you on the spot, throw you off maybe.
Awesome, man. Okay, I'm gonna take care and we'll
All
talk to you
right.
later. Okay, we'll see you.
All right, Dave.
Okay, bye.
All right.